animate or should animate the way that we think about this Democratic Republican experiment. Imperfect as it is, it's still our best hope for the liberty and equality that people desire and they believe America or the United States has stood for.
So happy Juneteenth, Dr. Yohuru Williams, and thank you for joining us again.
Thanks for having me. Good to see you.
My guest has been Dr. Yohuru Williams, Distinguished University Chair and Professor of History and Founding Director of the Racial Justice Initiative at the University of St. Thomas. He's the author, co-author, and editor of 11 books. And you can read his previous interviews done 3 years previous and 5 years before that at risingupwithsonali.com. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, host and executive producer of this program. I'm an independent journalist producing the subscriber-supported program nationally syndicated to radio stations, free speech TV, and podcast platforms.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. La,
la, la. Join KBOO around the campfire. Become a member during Camp KBOO's summer drive, taking place now through June 29th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give. Thank you.
Tune in every second and fourth Saturday night, midnight to 3 a.m. Sounds Unsound. Sounds Unsound. Sounds Unsound. Only on KBOO.
Hello. You might know my voice from many things that you've listened to before in the past. Before Morgan Freeman took all of my work. That's why I'm doing Hard Knot Radio. You can listen to it in Zamunda, you can listen to it in Brooklyn, or you can listen to it anywhere you want to hear politics, music, and anything else. I'm looking for my son Akeem.
Davey D, Hard Knot Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. It is that time of year where we have the third generation of a landmark happening. We're talking about the San Francisco Black Film Festival. And this one is one that looks to be impactful. Joining us is Cree Ray to talk a little bit about it. Opening night is going to be happening on Juneteenth, so that gives added weight. And I don't know, we were just talking a little bit offline, Cree, before you came on, about we're in crazy times. And so crazy times means that we come up with creative and sensational type of solutions. And I would imagine that this film festival looks to be one that's going to have some impact. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would definitely agree. Also being the first year that we've opened up on Juneteenth, I think mm-hmm. it's going to be special and impactful in more ways than one, definitely.
How important is it now, first of all, opening up on Juneteenth at a time when we see all our history as Black folks being systemically erased? And two, the fact that you and your family, from your grandmother to your pops, and now you, have been holding the archives of all these important films, many that we might not see on streaming services, many that would probably be tucked away somewhere because we're seeing all these companies and institutions say, well, we don't want to anger the president, so we just won't, under the guise of diversity, inclusion, and equity, they just won't show them. So it's like you all, people like yourself, are holding that mantle now.
Yeah, I think it's definitely important that we are that platform for these artists and individuals who have those films that not everybody would want to play anywhere, not everybody would want to see. And that's a big reason why my grandmother started San Francisco Black Film Festival, was she wanted to make sure that us as Black folk had our platform to be able to see, to be able to view, to be able to show all of their work. So opening up on Juneteenth, I think for me, that's really important, especially now that it is deemed a national holiday. It's almost like, okay, this is us, this is our time. Like, you're going to see us, you're going to hear us, which I think is important.
Are people trying to get into Hollywood at this point in time, the filmmakers that you talk to, or are they just kind of like, look, I'm just going to try and get my film out and go to these other circuits?
From what I've seen, it's definitely more of they just want their film out there. They're going to go through other circuits. There are still, you know, the few that obviously want to be in Hollywood and want the lights and all the flash, but I feel like it's not as important or as showy as it used to be. So as long as their work is out there and it's with a festival or in a platform that they believe in and that believes in them, that's kind of where their care is more.
Yeah, I would imagine that people would want to take a step back because Hollywood has shown its colors.
Yeah.
You know, all the people who got pulled from films because they said Free Palestine, and all the other companies that said, well, we're going to get rid of any sort of diversity. I think I was at some place and they were saying that Hollywood is now looking for the Yellowstone type of film model. You know, they said we're in the post George Floyd moment, so we're not looking for people like me and you. It's like, all right, so now you're really showing your colors, even though we've had some landmark films that have made Hollywood a hell of a lot of money, you know, with Black folks at the helm, but you want to go Yellowstone. So that should just say to me, the San Francisco Black Film Festival is even more important.
Yeah, exactly.
So what do you have in store? What are some of the films that you have coming up?
So one of the films that we have coming up is called Baldy. That one's going to be playing on June 20th on our comedy night. It's kind of like a comedic film. It's about a Black man who's celebrating his birthday. He has a receding hairline, and throughout each part of the receding hairline, he kind of goes through a memory of his past. Mm-hmm. And it's done in like a really comical way. We also have Vibeland. That's actually going to be part of our opening night film. And it's kind of like a horror film that's based in San Francisco. So they did almost their take on the Zodiac Killer, if you would say. And that one's going to be opening night on June 19th.
Everybody's getting into horror films. Mm-hmm. I mean, the obvious one is Sinners, right? Mm-hmm. You know, which I think was a great movie and I loved it. But Freaky Tales was kind of a horror story. You know, it had that element. And so now we have somebody else. Are we moving in another direction, or what's happening?
We might be. I feel like horror films are definitely making a comeback. They're also doing a lot of like remakes of some of the older they are Hollywood films. But a lot of the remakes of like the older horror films too. So I think it might be having its moment this year.
Red, what was the other film that they had? It was like a 2 or 3 part series. I think it was on the streaming service. Remember, it had Michael K. Williams before he died. Oh gosh, it was like in the South. Now it's bothering me. It's on the tip of my tongue. Oh, now it's bothering me, and I can't even look it up on Google. I can't, it's like sitting right there. It's going to come to me, but anyway, it just seems like. To me, I like the imagination that people are having. you know, when they're going there, you know, whether it's Boots and what he did with his first film, you know, Sorry to Bother You, which wasn't necessarily a horror film, but still,
yeah,
you know, it had those like, whoa, what kind of thing? Is this film in the tradition, or is it a complete remake, or are they taking a different approach?
They're taking a different approach towards it.
Really?
But and it's really cool just because it's based in San Francisco, so they kind of go throughout like all these different San Francisco landmarks. It's really cool. I'm excited for that one. I'm excited for a lot of people to be able to actually see that one, and that filmmaker and that cast and that team be able to get that film out there too.
What's the name of the film again?
Vibeland.
And that's going to be opening night.
Yeah, June 19th, Thursday.
June 19th. Okay, what are some of the other films you have coming up?
We also have a film called We Don't Work, which is actually a film by Kevin Epps, who's well known in San Francisco. Yeah, so we're playing his film. It's also shot, and he worked with Citizens Film on that one. So that one's going to be a special one. And that one is also June 19th on Thursday. So we're going to
Is it shot in San Francisco?
Yeah, shot in San Francisco.
Wow. So this is like the third film that's mm-hmm. shot in the city. I don't think it's going to be in a film festival, but we just saw Equipto in
okay.
a documentary on Board Stiff. And it was more of a documentary, but it had all the old Frisco thing. San Francisco was centered. You know, it wasn't like San Francisco, let's go to Oakland, but it was Frisco. How important is that just to see the city shine, you know, without all the other, you know, areas kind of creeping in?
For me, it's special. Throughout the years, we've been waiting for that and like looking for that. And of course, a lot of them says San Francisco. It's not San Francisco, like you say. It's like in Oakland, or it's in San Jose, or it's in like Hayward or San Leandro. Mm-hmm. So this year, we were actually pleasantly surprised on how many were actually shot in San Francisco, and the fact that they did not leave San Francisco. It stayed within that 7-mile radius, which was really cool to see. And I'm hoping that we keep getting more of those as well.
When we saw Equipto's film, one of the things that people said, but the fact that it was so focused on Frisco and it showed, you know, black and brown folks and everything, they said it was a gauntlet against gentrification. It was a reminder of how, you know, vibrant the city was with so many different folks mm-hmm. that have now been forced to move out. Is that the case with Kevin's film? Is that the case with the horror film? Like, you're looking at it and you go, yep, we lived here. We've been here.
Yeah. There's definitely like the old San Francisco vibe before all the gentrification has taken place, which if you're one of the people who have like actually seen that happen and like slowly see the city change, it's a really cool like bucket, I guess I would say, of like nostalgia of like mm-hmm. oh, like I remember when that store was there, or I remember when that shop was there, or I remember when that corner looked different, or I remember when that building wasn't white but it was like that salmon pink color, or like the gates were black and rusted, not silver and shiny,
right?
So like there's definitely those little pocket moments of nostalgia, which is special.
Kevin Epps, who you said is going to be featured mm-hmm. opening night, he made a lot of noise with Straight Out of Hunters Point, and then he went on to do some other films.
Mm-hmm.
How much has he improved as a filmmaker over the years? Is this like his best work, or is he coming at a whole different angle?
I would say almost like a whole different angle. And for me, it's hard because when he first started building that relationship with San Francisco Black Film Festival, that was with my grandmother. Mm-hmm. I was maybe five or six.
Really? Was it long ago?
Uh-huh.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So it's like every single year. And he's always supported every single year that I've done it, regardless of if he had a film in the festival or not. So the other day, it was funny, he was like texting me, and he was texting me a memory of like that he had with my grandmother. And then he was like, I actually think you were there. He's like, I think you had on this little dress. It was funny because for me, I was kind of like, I don't remember any of that.
Right.
And he actually texted me a picture too. His daughter just graduated from high school. And so it was kind of crazy to like like kind of crazy to think of just like all the age differences and like the gaps of just how long SFBFF has been happening, and then the pieces that like I was there for, but not obviously in the role that I carry now.
Right.
So that was kind of cool. And I actually told him I wanted to try to find, I know he has his old films, but I was going to try to find some of his older films that I don't remember so I can like watch them. Cause I was so young. I was like 5 or 6.
I didn't realize it was that long ago.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. It seems like yesterday, but the 90s is 30 years ago. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy. You know, you mentioned your mom. I mean, your grandma.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Who was she for people who don't know? Because she left her footprint.
Yeah.
Big footprints.
She did. I wish I sold some of those shoes. So Ave Montague, she actually started as a fashion. She went to school for buying, and that's when her time was in New York. And then she came to San Francisco. She did a lot of PR for the city. One of the last events that she did was the Inauguration West for Obama, and that was in 2009. I would say four days after is when she passed.
Oh, wow.
It was San Francisco Black Film Festival. How that came about was she also had a video store called AVM, so it was Ave Montague and then Rentals. And it focused on just Black film. So think about a blockbuster, but for literally just Black film. So that's how she started. Like, that's where San Francisco Black Film Festival was kind of born. She wanted to be able to have a bigger platform and actually have those filmmakers come out and have that place and that space for them to show their work. And that's how it was born. It started with a video store, and then she grew it into SFBFF, and then
right.
She used to have the artwork. Yeah.
She used to have the Oscar Micheaux Award as well.
Yep.
And Oscar Micheaux, for people who don't know, like one of the first Black filmmakers back in the 20s and 30s. Was it? I think it was the 20s and 30s. I don't know. I wasn't around. You know, I wasn't. You
neither
know,
was I.
Yeah, we weren't around. But he was doing those independent films and making a lot of noise. And I remember she would give those awards in his name. So it wasn't the Oscars, but it was the Michelle Awards. So that's cool. And your father, you know, he picked up the mantle and he had impact.
He did. It's kind of crazy, like the impact that they both had in different ways. My dad's impact, I would say, was very old school Fillmore. Like he was Fillmore. He focused on that. And he brought in different genres. So he loved sci-fi. Mm-hmm. So that was one thing that he definitely tried to pull back into SFBFF, was like sci-fi and animation. So he almost like, I would say his reign kind of turned it into almost like a new age SFBFF, and just the emphasis on like, this is Fillmore, I am Fillmore, like we are Fillmore. Right. That was kind of cool. And I was back in the city when he was running it too. That's when I had moved back and lived with him. So it was like also kind of wild to also see just the difference of like their working styles. Mm. That was cool to see. He was definitely a night owl. She was not. And then just like the difference of like how they did PR in a sense, I would say.
Right.
Was kind of cool to see.
And so how are you doing it? What's your signature?
I would say my signature is a little bit of like a mix between both of them.
Okay.
You know, Ave didn't play games or anything. She was pretty to the point, but she knew how to.
Right.
I would say my dad was just very straightforward. He didn't like the fluff. He did not like being in front of people whatsoever. I feel like if you ever met him, he was just the coolest, chillest guy, but he would kind of just be like back in the corner. Like he's not a show person. And I almost have like a mix. I have the moments where it's like, okay, this is, you know, it could be a lot sometimes. And then I also have the moments where it's like, okay, no, but like I'm Ave's granddaughter and like this is what she would have wanted. And then I think where I start to kind of rev off of all of that is when I go through and start picking like my venues and my vendors and all of those things. Like I've been trying to get it back to Black San Francisco. And if it's not Black San Francisco, because like you said, a lot of us have had to leave the city and a lot of us don't have our same businesses that we held in the city. So right. If it can't be Black, like my next choice is always going to be POC, just to keep the culture within the city and keep the vibrance of it. Because right. without them, without all of us helping each other out within our businesses or within our organizations, whether it's promoting, whether it's hiring you for something, you know, it's, we're going to keep getting pushed out, and that's what we don't want. So yeah.
Right. Cree, let me ask you this. If you just tuned in, I'm talking with Cree from the San Francisco Black Film Festival. It's going to be kicking off on Juneteenth. I'm going to ask you to let people know where the what venues they can see and all that. But I started off by, you know, mentioning people wanting to go to Hollywood and get to the whole streaming deals. And in the tradition of your grandma, Ave Montague, having a film store, right, is the next level to have a Black streaming platform. I know people have tried to do that. I don't know how successful it is. Is it something that you thought about venturing in? Does the film festival, you know, wind up doing a lot of streaming?
Yeah, so I tried to do it 1 year. Not as easy as it seems. And recently there is a Black streaming business. I'm trying to remember the name. It's like an email that I got a couple days ago. There's some platforms out there. As far as finding 100% Black owned platform, that one's a little bit harder to find. And if and when we do go to that point, it's something that I've thought about for about 3 years now. Tried it 1 year, keep revisiting it. I want it to be 100% Black owned streaming business for me to go into that.
What's the difficulty in streaming? Because you said it wasn't as easy as you as we think.
The rights that you need to be able to have a film streamed.
Really?
Mm-hmm. You have to make sure that that platform does not have any loopholes for anybody to be able to actually download that filmmaker's work. And not all of them have that. And the ones that do have that are a pretty penny. So some of it's, a lot of it's like funding, without us having the funding that we need to be able to offer that service is a little rough. And of course, if we're going to do it, we need to make sure that it's done right. And it's done in a way that nobody can just go and somehow download this filmmaker's work, because once somebody downloads that, they could go off and put it on you. Like, they can go put it anywhere. And then now that filmmaker has their work everywhere when they're trying to use it in certain platforms. It could ruin deals for them in other film festivals. Sometimes if you join a film festival and I'm like, okay, due to like our contract and your work, I want this to be our future film, but you can't play anywhere else until after this date. So there's a lot of things that can go into it. So A, when we do it, we want to make sure that we do it 100% right. And then B, when we do it, I want it to benefit, you know, Black people as a whole. I want it to benefit us as a whole.
So the technology to make sure the film doesn't get downloaded or bootlegged, it's a proprietary one that somebody owns, and then it becomes real expensive to get that sort of technology. Wow.
It just has to do with, like, I guess think of it as you pay for extra things for your website to make sure that nobody can steal anything that's inside of it. It's right. almost like that same concept. And sometimes the filmmakers, not that they don't have the rights to their films, but dependent on, did Netflix pick it up? Did Hulu pick it up? Like, who picked up this film? Because sometimes when that happens too, it's actually Netflix, or it's actually Hulu, or it's actually Peacock who has the rights to those films. So if we're streaming it elsewhere, it becomes can become like a whole thing. So, you know, you have to get legal involved. There's a lot that goes into like actually being able to stream films during a film festival.
And here I thought it was just like put it on a computer. Yeah, you're shaking your head like, no, son, nah. And then I would imagine
I learned the hard way it is not that simple, which is why now I am like I'm a lot more mindful, I should say, about that's why like when we do it, I'm like, it needs to be done 100% right.
And are there complications if you have music in the film as well? Do all of a sudden record labels step in and then they're like, well, you know, if you stream, that's a whole other license that you have to get? And so I'm asking this because I've been in a few documentaries and I remember there was one that KQED had us in. It's like one of the first documentaries, you know, and I remember we wanted to show it at Yerba Buena. Mm-hmm. You know, we thought it was no big deal. And these fools was like, if you show our documentary, you know, you got to get permission from all the people that's in it.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so we got all the people that was in it. Then they said, well, you know, the record labels. So he called up the record labels and they're like signed off. And then they kept moving the goalposts. Well, we had Bart and we had Muni. And if you show Muni, then you got to get permission. And then finally they said if we showed it, they would sue us. Even though we were in the film, like it's our, you know, like we're all in the film, and they were like, you can't show it publicly, you know, and all this crazy stuff. And that was like 20 years ago. And I was like, Jesus Christ. So, you know, just seemed like all these different complications, you know, the people in the film have to sign off, the record labels, and, you know, you showed the Bart tracks. And so Bart has to sign off. So that's how the things work.
It depends. It depends on that film. It depends on that filmmaker. It depends on the moment in time. For the most part, I want to say filmmakers are very good about if they're entering a film into a festival, if they're doing this, if they're doing that, in the moment that they're putting, you know, the actors in the film, in the moment that they're picking the music for the film and all of those things, I think there's already steps in place that they start to take prior to any of that happening. Because then it's like, okay, I'm one day going to like, I might present this to a film festival. I might, you know, put it in the bucket to be able to get picked. So I think a lot of them do their due diligence about making sure that those steps are taken prior to. I can't say for everybody that's the case, but I want to say for the most part, like I haven't came across anything with record labels. I haven't came across anything
right.
in that sense. I also haven't tried to stream anything. Like I haven't tried to just take something that I'm in and do that work. But
well, we're at a point now we can make our own music.
Exactly. And it's,
you know, just go online, make your own music. It's mine. It's all mine.
And you can do things like, you know, you take the background track, but you slow it down by 2 seconds or speed it up by 5 seconds. It's no longer the original track. So I feel like nowadays there's a lot of ways around things. And sometimes it's just as simple as, okay, well then during this scene, we got to cut the music down because of X, Y, and Z. And like, it is what it is. Yeah.
Last question on the technology tip, considering we're in Silicon Valley and considering you have services like Apple, you know, they have their own TV. Have there been any attempt by them to reach out or, you know, no dances being done locally to say, hey, you know, we got platforms. Let's see how we can. Is that a big missed opportunity? It seems like it is. I mean, y'all, everybody's right down the street, less than 30 miles away. You tune on, it's like you pay like $5 a month and it's like, okay, you still have the same shows.
Mm-hmm.
Cree got a big old film festival. Why aren't you dancing with her and figuring out how to, you know, be like, let's take this to the next level, or, you know, let's do something imaginative, you know, reimagine this whole thing.
Yeah, I think it's the sad story that we've known too well of not all big companies like to help smaller.
Even though they're a trillion dollar company.
Yeah.
Not a billion, trillion.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I think it's the same, you know, the same dance. And it's also not as easy to reach out to those bigger industries and ask for sponsors. And like I've had Dolby sponsor me 1 year. That's like the biggest that we've gotten.
Right.
Like you talk about like company wide or like
Yeah, I mean, I don't expect you to do it because I think you do a lot of work.
Yeah.
You have your plate filled. But I'm saying, I'm putting this out there. There are people that work at these companies. Mm-hmm. They're right down the street. These folks show up at our nightclubs. They come, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They soak up our culture for entertainment. And it just seems like somebody would be sitting there going, you know what? Why don't we just go up the street and see how we can do a dance with folks and make it equitable for all parties involved? Considering we're a $1 trillion company, we got platforms, yeah. We got some things. But anyway, that's just me ranting. I don't mean to rant.
Oh, no. I agree. We don't bite. I agree.
So with that being said, where are the venues that you have where we can see the film festival, and also give us a couple of more that are going to be you know, popping off?
Yeah. So for our first night, we're going to have it at Delancey Theater or Delancey Screening Room, which is right off the Embarcadero. That one's going to be June 19th, Thursday. June 20th, that's also going to be our comedy night. It's our third annual comedy night, something that we've had a lot of fun doing. So we've been bringing that back. We have our comedian, Tammy Tila from out of Oakland. She's mm-hmm. going to be performing. That is also going to be at AAACC, and that one's Friday, June 20th. And then on Saturday, June 21st, we will be back at AAACC as well. That one's going to be like our For the Culture Day.
Where is AAACC?
African-American Arts and Cultural Complex. So that's going to be within the Fillmore. And we have a long-standing relationship with AAACC. It's a wonderful building. There's a lot of art in there. So we're going
to
be...
Nice auditorium to sit down.
Yeah, nice. My favorite auditorium. So we're going to be there Friday and Saturday, so June 20th and 21st. And then for Sunday, this is actually going to be our free event. We will be at the SF Public Library.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And if we want more information, what's the website?
It's going to be sfbff.org.
There you have it. So, Cree, we appreciate you coming on. Any last surprise if you want to let us know?
We have Danny Glover coming on opening night for a meet and greet, and that's going to be Thursday, June
19th. Danny Glover?
Yeah.
DG? OG yep. DG? Okay.
Yes.
Is he in any of the films?
Not in any of the films. He has a long-standing relationship with my grandmother and my father. Brought him back this year. So super excited for that. And that's going to be opening night as well.
Okay. So Danny Glover opening night. And again, mm-hmm. that's going to be at Delancey.
Embarcadero.
There you have it. Cree Ray, thank you so much. We will look out for the San Francisco Black Film Festival. A lot of things happening. Go support it. Don't sit up there and say, why can't we do anything? No, here's your opportunity for you to come together and support. And it's always an excellent endeavor. And it's three generations deep, you know, so she ain't no rookie doing this. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Are bringing the heat. Hard Knock Radio will always be free. Oppression, regression, slavery, and possession.
Hard Knock rocking on your radio. Power to the people, revolution to the people. Hard Knock rocking on your radio. Power to the people, revolution to the people.
It is Hard Knock Radio. Davey D hanging out with you this afternoon. Today is June 16th, and on this day, we want to honor the memory of somebody who was near and dear to our hearts, an incredible artist, more importantly, an incredible activist, freedom fighter, Tupac Amaru Shakur, born June 16th, 1971. We want to honor what would have been his 54th birthday if he was still with us, and let you hear some words from him as we head on out the door. Happy heavenly birthday, Tupac. We miss you. We hope that the seeds you planted come to fruition, and the people who have followed your work admired your courage and embraced the type of love you had for our community. We're out for now, listening to Tupac Shakur.
Rapper, actor, poet, legend. We pay tribute to Tupac Amaru Shakur.
This is a big question. No one's been able to answer it, and this is staggering. How can the White House, which has a lot of rooms, and there be homelessness? And he's talking about helping homelessness. This is what I mean about practicality. All right, if there's someone homeless in Washington, D.C., if there's homelessness, and he has the White House, which has 1,000 rooms, why can't he take some of them people up the street and put them in his White House?
Society, I mean, it's like, you know those little things they have for the mice, where they go through around the circle and have little blocks for it and everything? Well, society is like that. They'll let you go as far as you want, but as soon as you start asking too many questions and you're ready to change, boom, their block will come. And for me, and I hope this doesn't start anything, but for me, since I'm living in a slummish area and I'm black, mines will come through being a statistic. You know, I'll get caught up in all of this, and one day I'll be with my friends and they'll go, let's go out party. We don't have a car. Let's steal a car. Get it. Let's just borrow a car. We'll steal a car and I'll go to jail for 16 years and come out and be bitter. And like the past elections, watching Jesse Jackson run and watching Dukakis run, those two people, Jesse Jackson and Dukakis, two people who I thought were going to, there it is. I said, all right, finally we're going to get a better America. But what happened? Bush won. I couldn't believe it, because every time I asked people, who would you have voted for? And everybody goes, Dukakis. But how did Bush win? I keep wondering. And then that just makes me rebel more against society, because it's supposed to represent the people. I don't want Bush in government. And I don't think Bush is a bad person or a bad president, because for the upper class, he's a perfect president. And that's how society is built. The upper class run it while we talk about it. I mean, the middle class and lower class, we talk about it. And for the working class, we're just lost. We're going through the motions. We're the worker bees. And they get to live like what?
What do you think right now the biggest enemies to rap are, or hip-hop?
Egotistical rappers who don't want to open up their brain.
Can you elaborate on that?
You know, like that whole thing with, like, Oakland is the only place where the rap is coming out. You know, New York's the only place that's coming out right now. They booty out there, or they booty over there. They ain't talking about nothing, you know what I'm saying? All of that needs to die, or else rap's gonna have problems, because it's gonna be so immature.
Okay.
And that's never gonna grow. Immaturity, just that never, that's just conflict and worse, you know what I'm saying? How can immaturity grow?
Right.
So, that's, we gotta drop all of that.
Hey, the situation to me is like this, you know what I'm saying? Everybody that's all involved with the rumors, and everybody that wants to know so much and is quick to judge so quick, they don't really know Pac. They don't know me, you know what I'm saying? They need to really just grow up, you know? It's just, it's music, it's entertainment, you know? Take it for what it's worth.
Check it, I grew up, screw up. Got introduced to the game, got an ounce of chopping rocks overnight. Biggie Smalls trying to turn into the black Frank White. We had to go dreads to change our description. Two cops is on the milk box missing. Showed they clothes, you know they got stepped on. A fist full of bullets, a chest full of Teflon. Run from the police, picture that. I'm too fat, I fucked around and catch an asthma attack. That's why I bust back, it don't faze me. When he drop, take his Glock and I'm Swayze. Celebrate my escape, solar Glock, what's some weight? Lay back, I got some money to make, motherfucker.
And waged it to a coastal battle. You know what I'm saying? that's just bananas right there. We just rappers, man. That's all we do is make music, man. That's it. Sticky smalls
is the past, but still I'm having memories of high speed when the cops crash. As I laugh, pushing the gas when my clocks blast. We was young and we was dumb, but we had heart. In the dark where we survived through the bad parts. Many dreams is what I had, and plenty wishes. No hesitation in extermination of these snitches. Envious bitches, they still continue to pursue me. A couple of movies, now the whole world's trying to screw me. Even the cops tried to sue me. So what can I do but stay true? Sipping 22s of brewing, now the media is trying to test me. Got the press asking questions, trying to stress me. Misery is all I see, that's my mind state. My history with the police to shake the crime rate. My main man had two strikes slip, got arrested and flipped. He screamed thug life and emptied the clip. Got tired of running from the police. Am I supposed to fail? I mean, should I just stop trying and give up? But then I'm like, nah, hold on. That's exactly what they waiting for me to do. But I had to have as much fun and get around the board as many times as I can before it's my turn to leave.
In a lot of rap nowadays, you hear so much about hard and tragic lives. Nobody mentioning religion or mentioning the Lord or a spiritual being or a higher being.
Well, some people feel like if they mention stuff like that, they give them like that soft look.
What's up, Bay Area? This is Tupac, representing Northern Cali from O-Town to Bay Area and back down to Eastside San Jose. California love. Get with us.
First question for you, Tupac. I guess give a little bit of background about where you're from and what got you into hip-hop.
From New York, Bronx, New York. I moved to Baltimore, spent some high school years out there, came to O-Town. What got me into hip-hop? All my travels through all those cities, that seemed to be the common denominator, hip-hop. That okay. was everywhere.
Tupac, is that your given name or is that a rap name?
It's my birth given name and my rap name.
Okay. You lived in Marin City for a while.
Mm-hmm.
How was your connection with hip-hop able to be maintained in that part of town? I mean, was there a thriving hip-hop scene at the time that you got there, or what?
Not really. It just gives you truth to the music. Being in Marin City was like the small town, so it taught me to be more straightforward with my style. Instead of just being like hysterical, lyrical, miracle, hypothetical, instead of being so metaphorical with the rhyme, just go straight at it and hit it dead on.
Okay.
And not waste time trying to cover it.
Why was that?
Because in Marin City, it seemed like things were like real country. So it was like everything hit straightforward. Poverty was straightforward. There was no way to say, you po, but I'm po. You know what I'm saying? Instead of saying, we need more money for, we po. You know what I'm saying? And that's how to influence my style.
Okay. Your connection with Digital Underground, how did you hook up with them?
I caught the D-Flow shuttle while I was in Marin City, shot with the conductor, D-Flow Shutter.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of albums, Sons of the P. It's just the way out of here. It's the escape.
Okay.
It's my way out the ghetto. My way to success, the D-Flow Shutter. So I caught it, and I haven't got off since.
Okay. Now put it in layman terms.
Basically.
Okay.
I bumped into this kid named Greg Jacobs, a.k.a. Shock G. And he hooked me up with Digital Underground. Then I hooked up with Money B. And Money B hooked me up with his stepmama. And his stepmama and me started making beats. And we got a little cool thing jumping on. We had a cool sound. So Shock asked me, you know, if I wanted a group. And I was like, yeah, but I don't want a group with my stepmama because she's going to try to take all the profit. See, because she wanted to go out there and be a woman with attitude. I was like, nah. I wanted to be more serious to the young black male. So Shock said, well, we got to get rid of my stepmama. So we went to San Quentin, Johnson just ditched her in the Scared Straight program. And then we got out, shot Quibi in the studio, and we was on. Basically. That's a true story. Don't say nothing. Just don't say nothing, man.
I'm
save
this one.
And mother, your stepmom out there, I just want to say I'm sorry, but you know, man got to do what a man got to do. It was Shock's idea. I'm sorry. Bertha.
Okay.
And she could get her half of the profits from our first cut.
What's the concept?
Jail time.
So what's the concept behind your album? Where are you coming from, and what message are you trying to convey?
The concept is the young black male. Everybody's been talking about it, but now it's not important no more. It's like we just skipped over it. It's not in fad to be down for the young black male no more. Everybody want to go past. You know, like the gangster shit just got exploited, just like back in the day with the movies. Everybody did all their little gunshots and their hand grenades and blew up ish, and they done moved on.
Right.
Now everybody's doing songs with the singing in it ish. So now I'm still down for the young black male. I'm going to stay until, you know, this shit straight. So it's all about the problems that we face, the problems that we face in everyday society.
What are those problems?
Police brutality, poverty, low unemployment, insufficient education, disunity, violence, black on black crime, teenage pregnancy, crack addiction. You want me to go on?
Right. So does your album address, does it point out the problems that are facing the young black males, or do you have solutions for some of the problems that you named off?
I go through it up and down. In some situations I show as having the power, and the other situations I show it as it's more apt to happen with the police or with the power structure having the ultimate power. So I show it both ways. I show ways how it really happens and ways that I wish it could be.
Right.
That's how I do it.
Growing up as an inner city brother, where every other had a pops and a mother, I was the product of a heated lover. Nobody knew how deep it screwed me. And since my pops never knew me, my family didn't know what to do with me. Was I somebody they despised? Curious look in their eyes as if they wonder if I'm dead or alive. Oh, mama can't control me. Quit trying to save my soul. I want to grow with my homies. A ticket time bomb. Ain't nobody fade me. Back in the 380 and fiend it from the stages. Sucker scatter, but it don't matter. I'm a cool shot. Post drop from all the buckshots that fools got. I'm tired of being a nice guy. I've been pouring my life, but don't know quite why. So they label me a lunatic, could care less. Death or success is what I quest, cause I'm fearless. Now the streak is out. Death row. I'm sick of being tired, sick of the science, body bags, and the guns
streets is death row.
The person I'm going to talk about next is a person who's very near to me, a person who's a second generation revolutionary. So please help me in welcoming Brother Tupac Shakur.
First, I want to say peace to my mother. She's not here, but I got to give a peace out to her because I wouldn't have been here if it wasn't for my mother. And I looked on the front of this thing and it says start from within to rebuild our original greatness, right? Okay, well, that's what my mother did. You know what I'm saying? And I'm listening about freedom fighters and strugglers. Well, you got to understand that when it was in to have a gun and to be in the street, my mother gave that up to be in the house and wash the dishes, you know what I'm saying, and feed us and put the thoughts in our brains, you know what I'm saying, because we didn't get any of that history from all of those soldiers that we lost. We got none of that. They all went to jail, if you can remember. They all went to penitentiaries. We didn't see none of that knowledge. If it was not for my mother who stayed home and didn't go out and do all that, then I wouldn't have had, excuse my language, but I wouldn't have been nowhere. So what I'm gonna do, hopefully, is I wanna be, I am Tupac Shakur. I have to be a reminder that we can't chill out. No, it ain't time to cool out and banquets and all that. It's still on. It's on just like it was on when you was young and you want to say that just like you said that back then. So how come now that I'm 20 years old and ready to start some shit up, everybody telling me to calm down? You know, don't curse, go to school, go to college. Well, that. You know, we had colleges for a while now. You know what I'm saying? And it's still Brenda's out there. It's still trapped. You know what I'm saying? And it gets me irked. because I understand that it's not going to stop. You know what I'm saying? It's not going to stop until we stop it.
That's right.
And it's not just white men that's doing this to Brenda. No. And it's not just white men that's keeping us trapped.
Right.
It's black.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We have to find the new African and everybody and all of us. Because if we keep running around looking for black and who got the most colors on and who got the baddest dashiki on, we still going to get, excuse my language,
right.
Because that it irks me that my mother right now is going through, you know, she has to get clean. This is somebody who I watched travel the whole country, you know what I'm saying, during a time when women were scared to speak up for the Black Panther. She spoke at Harvard, Yale, everywhere. And now I see my mother as what really going on. You know what I'm saying? And I don't see no big parades around my mother now. And she done got a dozen awards. And I don't see nobody there. You understand what I'm saying? So about all this, I take that lightly. I take all this lightly. What I want you to take seriously is what we have to do for the youth.
Right.
Because we're coming up in a totally different world.
Right.
This is not the same world that you had. This is not the 60s. This is not that. We grew up BC, before crack. That should say it all.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? We did not grow up without parents. You had parents that told you this and that, and this is what went on back in the day. Now you don't have that.
Right.
You have young kids, 14, coming home, their mama is smoking out or doing it to their best friend to get the product.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
So that means that it's not just about you taking care of your child. It's about you taking care of these children.
Because
that's what's out here. It's a gang of children. You understand what I'm saying? And it hurts. It hurts that it bothers me that I have to sidestep my youth to stand up and do some shit somebody else supposed to be doing.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
There's too many men out here for me to be doing this. Because it ain't my turn yet.
That's
I'm
right.
supposed to be following behind him getting the knowledge.
Right.
I don't even got a chance to get the fucking knowledge. I can't go to college. There's too much problems out here. I don't got the money. Nobody do. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
So what I'm saying is it's not as easy as we mapping it out to be.
Right.
And we got to stay real. We got to stay real. Before we could be new African, we got to be black first.
Right.
You understand? We got to get our brothers from the street like Harriet Tubman did. Why can't we look at that and see exactly what she was doing?
Right.
Like Malcolm did. The real Malcolm. Before the Nation of Islam. You got to remember this was a pimp. You know what I'm saying? The push and all that. We forgot about all that. And our strive to be enlightened, we forgot about all our brothers in the street.
Right.
About all our dope dealers, our pushers and our pimps.
Right.
And that's who's teaching the new generation.
That's right.
Because y'all not doing it.
That's true.
I'm sorry.
That's
but it's
right.
the pimps and the pushers who's teaching us. So if you got a problem with how we was raised, it's because they was the only ones who could do it. They the only ones who did it.
Right.
While everybody else wanted to go to college and, you know, yeah, everything has changed. They was the ones that was telling you the white man ain't. Here you go. Check this out, young blood. You take this product, you switch it, you make money, and that's how you beat the white man. You get money and you get the hell up out of here. Nobody else did that. So I don't want to hear shit about nobody telling me who I can't love and respect until you start doing what they did.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? To me, this is Mecca. You know what I'm saying? This is the black family. I see it here. But what makes it even that much more sad, and what makes me want to cry, is because as soon as I leave here, so does Mecca. You understand what I'm saying? We're going back to the real deal. Right out there, you're going to see them same sisters and Brenda. They right out there. And y'all going to get in y'all cars and drive the f*** home. You know what I'm saying? And I apologize, but check this out. You can't be no more offended by my curses than what's really going on. That's real. That's real, y'all. That's real. Y'all got to really be true to that. You got to be true to that. Because we letting the media and the white man cut us off. You letting them tell you that the rappers ain't real, and you know, you got to either be, you know, the intelligent person or you're a gutter person. We all the same. We all feel it like y'all feel it. I just can't hold a straight face when I see it.
Right.
This is proof that we can be together. The young black male is the future of us. And the young black sister is the future of us. It's going to be what you put into. So if you don't put don't be mad and blow up.
Killing us one by one. In one way or another, America will find a way to eliminate the problem one by one. The problem is the troublesome black youth of the ghetto. And one by one, we are being wiped off the face of this earth at an extremely alarming rate. And even more alarming is the fact that we are not fighting back. Brothers, sisters, when I say
hard knock, hard knock, hard knock radio, hard knock radio.
What's up, everybody? This is Goddess, this is Goddess and She, and you're tuning in to KBOO Portland. Holla at your girl.
Into the streets, into the streets, into the streets, into the streets.
Check out Ear to the Streets of Portland with hosts Sequoina
and Kayla
every first and third Thursday of the month starting at 7 o'clock p.m.
Listen in as we interview community organizers, speak on issues focused on Black Portland, and share community events happening in the area and elsewhere.
Listen on the radio at 90.7 FM, online at www.kbu.fm, or from your mobile phone at m.kbu.fm.
Follow KBU on Instagram at KBU Radio. Ear to the Streets.
This is Bird Note. We're approaching the summer solstice, the longest day of the year. In the northern reaches of Canada and Alaska, June days offer breeding birds almost continuous daylight. Here's one shorebird that breeds in the Arctic, the black-bellied plover. As you listen, imagine a bird with a dramatic black face, neck, and belly, a stark white head, and a speckled back. In late April and early May, black-bellied plovers make their way north along both the Atlantic and Pacific coasts. Many settle into the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to nest on the tundra. Here, a male circles overhead while giving its flight song. The plovers complete their breeding cycle in a month and a half. The parents build open nests on the ground where they lay and incubate four eggs. As soon as the young hatch, alert and covered with down, they follow their parents and begin foraging for insects on the tundra's low vegetation. Shortly after the summer solstice, the adult black-bellied plovers begin their southbound migration without their young. The juveniles won't follow for another month. And yet somehow they know the route, even though they have never flown it before. Learn more about black-bellied plovers and other birds of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge at birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
We'll be right back.
This is Norman Solomon saying that you're listening to non-commercial, listener-sponsored, volunteer-driven community radio, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
Camp KBOO is now in session. Sign up to support us during our summer membership drive now through June 20.